Bye.
Speaking of the Mississippi River and catfishing, wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, it would be.
You know, one of my best friends, her name is Lindsay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been friends with her for years. And she actually, her and her husband came up here to get a Boston pug. One of those ugly dogs with the smash in face.
Wait, so a Boston Terrier or a pug?
Pug.
Or is it a mix?
It's a pug.
Oh, okay. Okay.
P-U-G with the big bulging
alien
eyes and all. So she comes up here to Hartsel, her and her husband. She got like 8 kids, right? Make sure I'm on. Yeah. Welcome to live chat. Remember to guard. Okay. Hey, JR. JR is one of our moderators. We go to church together. And Eric.
Hi, JR.
When Eric sobers up, he'll be on here. But just want to welcome everybody to this show tonight with the Mississippi Queen, Casey. But anyhow, her and her husband come up here with their 8 kids, right? And I said, leave your kids at home because they were going to get the dog up there where Mother Angelica's Blessed Sacrament is.
Uh-huh. I've been there.
Yeah, like a one red light city.
Yeah.
I said, kids will hate you for taking them up there. So she left them. So we made all these plans, and me and Connie were going to meet her and Phil for dinner, blah, 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 blah. And then the hotel they ended up at was like even past that shrine. You know, that shrine's in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Actually, it was an hour and a half drive from my house. And so it was going to be a three-hour drive plus dinner. And I was worn out.
Have you ever read her book? I'm just, this is a side note, but have you ever read her book? The Raymond Arroyo?
Lindsay's?
No. Raymond Arroyo. He wrote a book on Mother Angelica. I think it was her book and he narrated it. Anyways, it was a great book.
I worked for her.
Did you?
Yeah. And I've had her visit me 4 times since she's been dead.
Wow.
Yeah, but she's buried there. You've been there in the lower crypt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyhow, Lindsay and her husband, you know, they were going to come to Mass with us at the cathedral on their way home. And she can't follow simple directions like most women. Most women can't tell you where they live or anything. I know because I'm in real estate and I work with women. They don't know where they work. They don't know where they live. They can't tell you where they work or live. And so she's so late, they don't even get into the Mass. But so they didn't show up. And I'm thinking, because the joke I've got with her is she's really, in real life, she's a 500-pound man, a chain smoker wearing a wife beater, probably a pedophile, living at home with his mother, and she's not even right, that's the thing. And she proved it to me. She stood me up for dinner. Then she didn't show up for church, but she did text me pictures of her outside my church. So they'd made it. And then they got as far down the road as they could by the time church was out. So I hit her. So when you said catfish, and I'm good friends with her husband, Phil. So I always tell Phil, I know that you're her. You know, because sometimes she'll text me on her husband's phone because her battery's dead. She's got like 8 kids. You know, she homeschools them.
Well, that she's got an excuse then.
Yeah, so it's finally good to talk to you face-to-face, sort of.
Sort of, yeah.
And are you in Mississippi?
I am.
Okay, and y'all have power?
We do. But I am barefoot right now, but
I am too. Hey, Catholic Dad. Do you know Catholic Dad?
Chris Rangel? I don't.
Yep, Dad's Lovecraft, JR. Catholic Dad's a good guy. He lives, I don't want to dox him, but he lives near Mickey Mouse. I'll give you that much information.
Okay.
Okay, you know where Mickey Mouse lives?
Orlando, I'm assuming.
He's a good guy. And he was a cradle that left, and, you know, I don't do rehearsals for a reason, because I like to have a genuine show, asking real questions. And like next week, I got a guy that I've known for years, and we were in the same outfit together, and I found out he's becoming Catholic. Okay. That a big shocker. And I don't, and he called me a few, I said, I don't want to hear anything about it to your on the show.
Yeah. So,
hey, see, I know your dad was in the Marine Corps. I know you cut hair.
Mm-hmm.
I know you do like CrossFit stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know you love to travel and go on like weekend play, you know, places around Mississippi.
Yeah, or and beyond. I mean, I don't just stay in the area.
So,
yeah. So and that's one thing. I don't remember when we started following each other. It's been a couple of years.
Yeah.
But I remember coming across your page and seeing that you were a former Marine and that you were Catholic. And my dad was in the Marines, and both my brothers were in the Marines. So dad was in Vietnam. Both my brothers served in Iraq. And yeah, so when I came across that, I was like, well, this is familiar territory. And he's Catholic. It was like, what could go wrong here?
Yeah.
Like, and I've enjoyed your commentary. I've enjoyed your content since.
And you have
very,
not blocked
amusing.
You have not blocked me a single time.
I got close one time.
Lindsay's blocked me twice. She's blocked me twice. And I've blocked Connie about 8 times. She's blocked me, my wife, about she's blocked. So if I'm real good friends with you, I've probably blocked you before. I don't think I blocked Brian. But so, you know, I was like watching your content on Instagram, and there was another girl about your age, and she looked very similar, but she lived in one of them I states, like Iowa or Indiana or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you said I was repeating myself, but I thought I would get y'all mixed up.
Oh.
I'd be talking to you, thinking I was talking to her, thinking I was talking to you. So you thought I was a little bit crazy in the head, which I am.
I did.
You did. So, but that was my drinking days too. I retired from drinking about 3 years ago.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was probably around the height of when I was like, I don't know what's going on here with this.
Yeah, mental illness combined with alcohol, those are not a good mix. So,
but you know, I think being raised about a bunch of Marines, you got to have patience as a female. So,
just, you know, it's probably a lot like your dad and brothers. Maybe I would be more like them, the part of them you might not know.
Well, yeah, I hope not.
There's a Marine part of them, I promise, that is a Marine part and not a family part. So I don't mean that bad. But
No. I know.
So were you born Catholic, and was your dad Catholic from birth, or how did that go?
I was born Catholic, born and raised, and that was because of my mom. Her family was Catholic. My dad was actually Baptist. My dad never converted. So what faith we got, we were taken to church all throughout my life. Like, we did not miss church, and church was at 7:30. We had a little mission church in Raymond, Mississippi, and we got up at 7:30 every Sunday and went to church and went to Sunday school.
Why so early?
Because they had to say the mass at our church before they went to the main church. We were a mission of a church here in Clinton, where I'm from.
Catholic.
I mean, where I live now.
Okay. Hey, Haley. Haley's not far from me. I think Haley's in Arkansas. But so you did actually go to the Catholic church, and your dad had been Baptist?
He was until the day he died.
In Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But he had no problem, my mom taking us to church and raising us Catholic. I mean, he thought it was good for us, but now he didn't go. So, mm-hmm. To say that we were, kind of improperly catechized is an understatement. I mean, when I got to college, I remember my mom at Southern. I went down to Southern Mississippi to the University of Southern. And when I got down there, I was going through kind of like the opening things where everybody meets. You know, you kind of look at sororities or look at clubs that you want to go into. And I saw the Catholic Student Association there. And my mom was like, I think this would be a good thing for you, Casey. Like, I think you need to get into this. And I was like, okay. So I went and talked to them. And that's kind of when I understood, like, wow, like, all I did was go to church. Like, I never... Like I didn't, all these kids, and I mean, South Mississippi, especially in that area, is very richly Catholic because they're close to New Orleans and the coast. And so all these kids like knew their rosaries and knew all these prayers and knew all this worship music. And yeah, I mean, I do now, but knew all these prayers by heart and all this worship music. And I just sat there, like, I was just like, wow. And so I started talking to a priest. Let me back this up. So I started dating a guy in college, and he was the campus music minister for Southern at the time. And we started dating, and he was kind of the one that got me into like my faith again. He like made it seem, I mean, he was on fire with the faith. And like, I still to this day probably credit him a lot of my like coming back to my like roots, I guess, because who knows what would have happened. But he led me into the church and was so appealing to me because he was so passionate about it. And we broke up though, and it like absolutely wrecked me. That was probably one of the lowest parts of my life. I'm not proud to say this, but I used to like smoke and drink. And after that, and like, I just got into all kinds of like just anything but church. And I guess like looking back, what that taught me was that like reversion or conversion, that can happen multiple times in somebody's life. It's not just, and a lot of times, and not to hate on Protestants, but a lot of times, sometimes they think that a revival is just going to do it and heal you. And that if it didn't, or if you're not turning your ways, then it didn't take. Or, and that was very, like, being raised in this area, Catholics are not prominent. We're not a prominent religion at all. And it's kind of like, well, once you're saved, you're always saved. And there's no point in really trying because you're going to go to heaven. I mean, that's what Jesus came to do. He came to save us. So don't really worry about it. You know,
you're in.
You're right. And so when that happened, when we broke up and I just went into a really dark place, I was there for a couple of years. I did talk to a priest and I did get some answers, but they weren't great ones. And that priest was a little bit liberal, like looking back. And some things that he told me was like, hell's not as full as you think it is. And I was like, wow, that's a pretty bold statement. Like I was thinking kind of even then, but it, you know, also kind of like gave me hope and it reinforced like that once saved, always saved thing, you know, kind of in me. So it was like,
right about that. But that's one thing I hope they're right about.
Yeah, really, yeah. You hope.
I mean, yeah, when I talk to those people, I say, I hope you're right.
Right. So, okay. So that happened. And then I kind of just fell off. Like I put religion on the back burner. I wasn't going to church. I was doing a lot of drinking, a lot of partying. And that went on. Probably I would go to church every once in a while, but that probably went on for about 7-8 years. And then I felt this calling. I kept feeling like this calling, like church is not enough, Casey. Church is not enough. Like you need to start doing it regularly. And then you probably need to go to confession. So, and the thought of confession, it was just like scared me half to death. Like I was not ready for that. So I knew I made myself, I was like, you need to be consistent with going to Mass. And so I did that. And once I did that, I have to say this about my brother too. He's another reason for my, probably my reversion. My brother is very devout Catholic, and I don't say that about too many people. It's very hard for me to use the word devout because I just don't think a lot of people deserve that term. But Wesley, my brother, is, gosh, one of the strongest people in the faith that I've ever met, and will defend the church and really critically thinks about what's going on in today. And we've talked about things, hot topics that you've talked about too on your show, like Taylor Marshall and Matt Frad. And I mean, we go over some big name speakers and we'll kind of like think through what they're saying. And at the time, you know, his faith was like an anchor for me, and probably his prayers too. I mean, honestly, he would send me prayers. He lived in Houma, Louisiana at the time, and he would send me. Who's from there?
Well, Haley's from Louisiana, but Houma's is where all the oil rig people.
Oh, well, he wasn't in the oil rig, but he worked for a company down there that took the guys to the oil rigs.
Right.
But he would send me adoration cards that he had been to adoration and that he had offered that for me. So I know, sure I know a lot of that helped. But he never gave up on me, you know, and he always was sharing quotes or always, you know, sharing books with me. Like, you need to read this book. I never read them. Like I was like, okay, thanks Wesley. You know, like, but he was relentless. I mean, and it was never an over oppressing thing. It was just like, hey, I read this book. I think you would like it. You know, hey, and then he wouldn't bring it up again. He's like, hey, did you read that book? It was just kind of like, it was just a normal thing for him in conversation. Like, oh, you need to read this book. You know,
he's older.
He's old. Yeah. He's 2 years older than me.
Both brothers older?
No, I have a younger one.
Okay.
This is my older brother. And Wesley's got a cool conversion story too. I'll have to tell him, he needs to come on your show, but he's got a really cool, because I remember him as a child and he's completely different now. But anyways, just seeing him and seeing the things that God was doing in his life, it inspired me and it kept me not veering off too far. And so I really started plugging into my faith, and Wesley and I took a trip up to St. Louis. And I think it was just for fun this time. Or maybe we had gone to see a priest that was staying in Green Bay. There's a Abbey in Green Bay.
Yeah.
That we our priest that we had down here. He was in the Norbertines, and anyways, he was staying up there. And I think this might have been that trip. Well, we go to the cathedral in St. Louis. I mean, absolutely beautiful. And they had confession there. And they have confession all the time, which, I mean, down here, which our parish has gotten better about confession, but I mean, it's hard to find confession unless it's 3:45 on a Saturday, you know? I mean, it's just, I don't know. Anyways.
That's tough to do football season. Yeah. Saturdays and football season. Sorry.
So, yeah. So there was like perpetual reconciliation going on in that mass, and I heard that church, and I went in because it was like one of those old school mafia type, you know, confessionals. And I was like, oh, nobody will know who I am. This will be so, you know, like great. I can really have an honest confession. And that priest was very hard on me, mm-hmm. and it's what I needed. And I tell people, you know, the things that he said, and they're like, God, like I would have never gone back. And I said, you don't understand. Like, I think God always gives us and the confessor that we need. And if we believe that, like what that can do, I don't know, but that priest, he chastised me and he said he was going to, afterwards, because he caught me, and I'm going to be honest about this. he caught me in a lie. Like, I had been to confession. It had been 10 years since my last confession. So it was, I was in college. Or maybe right out of college. No. Yeah, I was right out of college. And I didn't confess this sin in that confession. Mm-hmm. And he caught that. He said, wait, what, when did you say where your last confession was? And I said, oh, it's 10 years ago. And he said, and when did this occur? And I told him, and he said, you didn't confess that in your last confession. And he said, that's a sacrilege. And he was like, young lady, you could have been in some serious danger. Your soul has been in some serious danger for a long time. And he said, and I'm gonna chastise you on that. He said, you should not have done that. And it dawned on me, and it was like, I just didn't think that was that serious. And I don't think kids nowadays, I mean, I was told to go to confession, but it was like, okay, well, if I omit any, God's going to forgive them, you know? So what's the point in telling the really bad ones that I'm really embarrassed about? It was like, there wasn't that conviction of, or called to completely cleanse yourself, I guess, that I missed somehow in my catechesis. And I didn't even know what that word was when I was younger. I mean, never heard it in my life, you know, it was Sunday school. Mm-hmm. So after that, my life was pretty much, I would say, more on a clear path. I needed that confession terribly. And since then, God's always spoken to me in like words. And so I'll get a word. And the first word I ever got was discipline. And that is a big one for me because I'm very attracted to nuance. So once I get into something, it's like, oh, I'll do this. And then it's like, oh, the newness is worn off. I'm not really interested anymore. And so I leave a lot of things half done. And it was the lack of discipline. And God showed that to me. Because I remember looking up the definition then. I was like, oh, this doesn't look good, God. I don't like this. Like, this is not what I prided myself on, which is just to be carefree and like really free-spirited. You know, that's where my identity lied. And I loved that. I loved being able to say that I was like that. And so when God spoke that word to me, I mean, it really kind of stopped me in my tracks. And it was, that's when I started the morning devotional, getting up early and having that time with God every day. And I've been doing that for 10 years now. But giving the first fruits, you know, of your morning, of your day to Him. And so it started with that. And then I'll tell you another one I got. This one was in a confessional too. I was on a bachelorette trip and for my sister-in-law, and I was the maid of honor. And so I had a lot of responsibility, and we went to Nashville, and I'd planned all these things. And we had a couple of girls that were just being defiant. I mean, they didn't want to do the things that we had planned. So they wanted to do their own things, and it was really like getting at me, gnawing at me that they did not want to do this. And this was not for them. This was, you know, all the stuff. And so it all came to a head on her wedding day. And I kind of almost lost my temper on one of them. And in a righteous way, it was justified, but I had let it just fester for way too long, that the resentment. And so the day after, they got married on a Saturday. The day after, on Sunday, I went to confession. I mean, I called the priest down in Natchez, or I texted him, and I said, I've got to come to confession. And he said, okay, come on, you know, you'll have to go to this guy because I'm going to the mission church. Anyways, said, he'll be here at this time. Go ahead. And so I went, and I, you know, explained this whole ordeal to this priest, this young priest in Natchez in the cathedral down there. Or the basilica, excuse me. Anyways, he listened, and I said, you know, this is what happened. I feel like I need to confess this, but I'm not really sure why. Like, I know that I have a lot of anger and resentment about it. And he like just dead looked at me, and he just stopped, and he said, no. He said, sounds like you have a pride problem. And I went, Man, I just looked at him and I was like, pride. Everything wanted me to scream. No, they have a pride problem. I don't have a pride problem. It's them. And I was like, you aren't listening. And so he was like, that's you. And he said, they're not here. You're the one that's here. You're the one that's working on, like, you've got a pride problem. And he said, I'm going to send you home with this prayer. And it was the Litany of Humility. And he said, I want you to say this prayer. And he's like, this isn't your penance. You know, I'm going to give you your penance, but I want you to start saying this because it's life changing. And I said, okay. He said, promise me you'll do that. And I said, okay, I will. Well, I didn't look at that thing for probably 2 weeks. I mean, I think I read one or two of the first sentences and I was like,
it's a downer.
It is. And it's
so yeah. An ego buster.
And I kept that little card and I was like, but it kept gnawing at me. And I finally picked it up one day and I was like, I'm going to read this thing. I'm just going to read it. I'm going to say it. And so, it's that second part that really gets you. The second part, I just remember I couldn't even hardly say the words because I knew deep down it convicted me so bad. And I was like, there is no way that any of this lives inside of me, this lack of ego. And it just broke me. It really did. But I knew when he said that, when he gave me that card, I knew that that was my second word that God had given me was humility. I'm still a work in progress. You know, a lot of the reason why I haven't talked to you, I guess, you know, you've asked me to come on before and I kept giving you the runaround. I didn't feel my story was complete, but you know, after some discernment about that, like, I don't think anybody's is. Nobody's story is complete. If we're still alive, we're still working in our conversion or our reversion or whatever you want to call it. I mean, and so I think to catch you up to now, that would probably sum up a lot, unless you have any other specific questions.
Well, you know, what you're saying is hitting home with me, because I'll just be honest with you. There's a priest that I avoid. I mean, it's probably been 6 weeks since I've been to confession, and I'm a one-a-week, you know.
You're a what?
A once-a-week guy, or once every 2 weeks. The problem is the same reason as you gave. It's inconvenient as hell. I mean, it's a ridiculous go. And we as Catholics believe that the sacrament, you know, the priest, I'm going to say this plain as I could. Hey, Olive Mule, Olive, I need you to answer. Send me an email. Okay. He's another one. He's another runner. Olive Mule, a runner. You know what I mean by a runner?
No.
He's running away from me. He's supposed to be on the road. Okay. So, JohnEdwards62@iCloud.com. These people, they act like they can't find my email. It's all over my stuff, you know. It's real easy. And I'm the hound of hell. I'll keep after you till you show up. But, you know, we believe that priest, the Latin word, persona Christo. I don't know how to, the accent. I don't have a Latin accent. But the priest during any of the sacraments becomes Christ.
Right.
Whether it's communion, confession, confirmation, marrying you off, ordaining you as a priest, he's Christ. And I talked to Father Mary. I don't know if you ever see him on ESPN. He's like big old priest. And talk to him, and he comes over to the house sometimes. I got one of his beers he drank over there. It's an icon. I keep it as a relic. It's even got a slobber in the bottom, like the last drop of beer. It's a relic. And he blesses a dog too. He likes a dog. And my dog's been a priest before. But anyhow, I said, how do you go and how do you go from taking confession for an hour before Mass and all the stuff you must hear, and then just switch gears and go up there to the altar and do Mass? I mean, they go right from the booth at my church, from the booth up there to the Mass, do a little thing, and they're preaching and they're giving out the Eucharist. And, you know, priests are men. They hear stuff that a lot of men shouldn't be hearing. They talk to women about stuff that other men don't hear. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, dozens of our confession lines are real long, and most people are your age at my church. That confession line is your age. And I'm wondering, my gosh, you know, them women, you can time your confession, how long your wait is by how many women are in line. Because the guys go in there like it's a number one, you know, like a tinkle. And the women go in there like they're giving birth, like they're in labor. They're in there forever and ever. So you can tack 10 minutes. For every female in the confession line, that's at least 10 minutes. So
y'all must have a chatty priest too. I mean, a lot of
we
guys
do.
I've
been avoiding them. I do. But he goes, Father Leonard said, when he puts the ribbon on or whatever, the sash,
uh-huh,
to go in confession, he says he disappears. It's like he says, I don't exist. He said, I become Christ. He possesses me. He said, I don't hear nothing. I don't remember nothing at all.
Well, that's good. That's a blessing. You know, I think I have had some bad, I mean, I'm not going to say bad confessors, but I have had some priests say some things sometimes where I wanted to gently rebuke them, like, and say that wasn't helpful and that wasn't necessary to say that. Like, and some that have said, that have given bad dogma and theology about the church. Mm-hmm. And I've asked in another confession about it, and the priest was like, who told you that? Like,
yeah.
I mean, they're wrong, you know?
I've heard that.
Yeah, I mean, so there are times, and you've got to kind of discern a little bit on them, because I've had a priest say that gossip was worse than missing Mass,
mm-hmm,
and that's wrong. Like, theologically, that's wrong. Mass is number one, and the way that he put it was that gossip hurts more than just the person. There is a ripple effect. And I get the point he was saying. He was a more liberal priest, but that was terrible. That was a terrible statement to make. And I've talked to several priests that have said, absolutely not. No, he shouldn't have said that.
I've heard priests say the same. I've heard priests that don't agree. When I worked at EWTN, I got to be around a lot of well-known priests, you know, famous priests on TV. And I would, mm-hmm, ask questions. I'd get different answers from them. And since I'm not going to say grown up, but since I've learned more.
Matured in your faith.
I go canon law and look it up. It's real easy to go canon law and see what the final authority is. But like, I've had a priest tell me, and I won't mention his name, but if I mention his name, most people watching this will know who he is. And he's told me, no matter what, when you're with your family, always take communion. Because if your family does not see you, like your kids, grandkids, wife, they see you not taking communion, it's going to scandalize. It'll scandalize because they'll think, wonder what daddy's done.
Do you agree with that?
Well, I have you know what they call, you know, the Catholics that have a mystic interpretation of things. Like Francis, Pope Francis, you know, a lot of people get on to him about some of the things he said about receiving the Eucharist. And his thing is, this isn't I'm going to paraphrase him, okay? This isn't like a doggy treat because you were a good boy. This is food for your soul to be forgiven, cleansed, healed, you're receiving God. So there's a part of me, you know, in First Corinthians where it talks about not discerning the body. Nope, don't agree with that. That's Haley. But there's a part of that that, okay, it's like this. I got a priest. I'll tell you what his name is. His name is Father Adams. Okay? And he knows my voice. And if I don't go in there for a year, he knows my voice, and he'll ask me something. Because there have been times where I've gone to receive communion without going to confession. Okay? And I try to time it to go on Sunday morning, so I ain't got time to F up by the time the Eucharist is out there. Okay? Because I know if I go to confession on Wednesday, I'm going to mess up before Sunday.
So I don't know your stance on that, but I don't agree with what he said. And here's my reason why. I think it was Father Mike that I've heard explain, like, the kind of like taking the Eucharist without going to confession, especially if you're in mortal sin. That it's almost like forcing intimacy with your spouse without making reparations for something that hurt them deeply. And I think that still holds true whether your children are watching or not. You know, if you haven't prepared your soul to house God, to become one with God, then you have no right to that, you know? Then just stay and stay kneeling, you know? I mean, or don't, yeah, whatever. Go up and get a blessing. I think that...
Hey, that's the, you know, people talk about receiving on the hand or tongue. This is the loser. That's the loser mode. I'm a loser. I didn't go to confession. I'm not worthy. You remember the movie Wayne's World?
Yeah.
Not worthy. I'm not worthy. Go ahead.
But I think that you just haven't made the proper preparations, and I don't think that you should ever force God on into you when you haven't prepared a place for Him. That's just my take.
Some Catholics and priests that will talk about habits and defect and how that plays into, if you read canon law, you know, you got the three elements of mortal sin, and we don't need to take the communion with mortal sin when we're aware of mortal sin. And one of them is full knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of them is you've not been... You're doing it on your, you're choosing to do that sin on your own, right?
You have full knowledge. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It has to be a grave sin and of your consent, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And then you read in the catechism, they'll break it down further to where there could be mental things, psychological habits. Then you go into canon law, and they'll break it down even further about defect. For instance, and I'm just talking. I'm not saying I'm a priest or canon lawyer or authority at all. I'm just, like I said, just talking to a Catholic friend at the bar, sipping our rum or vodka.
This is just root beer.
Yeah. Is it Barks root beer?
No, it's one of those expensive ones, the Zevia.
Root beer? Really?
Uh-huh.
It's root beer?
Mm-hmm.
You're like the only person I know besides me that likes root beer.
Creamy root beer.
That's good. Cool. That's cool. Mm-hmm. I love root beer. But so my friend I was telling you about earlier, she believes, like she talks about drug addicts or people that are dealing with addictions.
Mm-hmm.
How it might not be a mortal sin if it's something... This part addiction, part habit, like a habit, like you're not willfully doing this. You know, there's a physical chain.
Dependency, yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Okay, yeah. Masturbation, okay. You know, it says in there that your age, station in life, sometimes it's an addiction, sometimes there could be some psychological attachment to that sin that makes it hard to break. And that is what's the word? The word that they use, the level of responsibility. What's it called? I forget what it's called, but it's taking, okay, it's like suicide. You know, everybody in the whole world says suicide is a mortal sin. You go straight to hell no matter what. Well, the church don't say that.
No.
The church does not say that. Happy people do not go and kill themselves. Normal, happy people do not just say, I'm going to go hang myself today for the hell of it. They're hurting. They're suffering. They're sick. They're mentally ill. People don't go to hell for having cancer. You don't go to hell because you ran a stop sign and hit a tree and go to hell because you made a mistake like that. And so maybe if you just robbed a bank or beat your wife and you shot yourself, I can see that being a mortal sin because you're escaping consequence on the earth. You're choosing that. But somebody's battling demons of depression and grief and just has nowhere to turn. There's, you know, levels of that lessen the severity of whether or not you talk about a teenage girl that's being not, I won't say raped, but being, I mean, it is a rape. When she says no and the guy won't leave her alone, she caves in. It is rape. In my opinion, is that a mortal sin? She's resisting. She's not wanting to do it. He's putting the pressure. And she's got emotional problems, daddy issues, whatever. And she gives,
I wouldn't call that, I don't know. That's nuanced. It would be a definitely... I mean, it's definitely something to still go to confession for. Obviously,
oh, yeah.
You know.
Certainly. Yeah. Absolutely.
But I think that's where a lot of people, you get into that slippery slope of like, well, that's not technically mortal, so I don't have to go to confession. You know, people look at confession, and the more and more you go, and I'm not going to say the easier it gets, but the more your soul longs for it. You know, to me, the more you feel the weight of sin, especially mortal. I mean, you know, if you've committed something mortal, I mean, it's like, wow, like I feel cut off, you know? And I think that just comes from going over, I mean, I don't go once a week. I used to. There was a time in my life, I didn't bring this up, but there was a time in my life.
Letting the dog out. Keep talking. I'm listening.
There was a time in my life where I really struggled with scrupulosity.
Trigonometry.
What?
Trigonometry?
Scrupulosity.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That I thought everything was a sin. I thought watching a show that, you know, whatever, it was like I was so sensitive to all of it that it's like it got me into a really deep, dark place. And actually probably 2023 was one of my hardest years in my faith journey because I had just been so scrupulous with myself that I couldn't even enjoy anything anymore. I mean, it was like, I was constantly looking, it's going to lead me to sin. That's going to lead me to sin. This is where it's going to go. And oh man, I've gone and cried in that confessional with a priest that just sat there and looked at me. I mean, it's like, you know, it was a young guy and he's just like, I don't know what to tell you. You know, I mean, God's working on you. All I can tell you is just to keep coming back. You know, I mean, and I remember like wanting to like just hit the chair and be like, I don't want to come back anymore. It's not doing anything. Like, I feel terrible. John, and this is serious. I got in such a bad place that I had lost like all joy. Like I just didn't think anything was fun anymore. I'd lost my sense of humor. And it wasn't that I was sad and depressed, because that wasn't it. It was just like, I didn't feel like I could enjoy things like without thinking that there's sin involved.
Right.
And oh yeah. Divine mercy. Yes, I did. So this past summer, I did, I did a consecration to Saint Joseph and to Mary. And that, I think they led me out of it. Both of them. I mean, I was grabbing at anything, anything that I thought the harder, the better. Like, let me, like, if it's hard, I want to do it. Now I didn't do, what was it? St. Louis de Montfort. If it was it his, that is so hard. Oh my gosh. I started it and I was like, yeah, I can't do this. this is too much. But I did do a 33 day. I think it was the 33 day Marian consecration. And then I did St. Joseph's, and that one, he surprised me big time. I did not realize just how powerful he is, but in a gentle way. Like, it's just, I don't know. It was crazy. That was a wonderful mass, my consecration mass. When I finished my consecration to St. Joseph, that mass and that priest, because I was in Meridian, Mississippi at the time, not far from you, actually. And I'd never been to this church before, but I was up there and I knew I had to do this. And I ran in there. I think he had already finished. I got the times wrong on confession. It was a Saturday vigil mass. And I ran in and there were two guys holding the door for mass. And it was about 10, 15 minutes before. And two older men. And I said, oh, is he doing confessions? And they were like, oh, no, he's probably already done with them. He might be still in there. I went and checked and I was like, he wasn't. And I was like, oh, could you please, like, can somebody find him? I was like, I did a consecration to St. Joseph and I really need to make a confession before this mass. And they're like, oh, okay. Like, let's go find him. So they went and found him. And oh my gosh, that was the best confession. Like, I still remember that priest. He was an Indian priest, young guy. But just almost like one of those that can read souls, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he just looked at me and it was like just these piercing eyes. And he was just, because I told him, I said, this is my consecration to St. Joseph confession. And he said, oh, okay. You know, it's like, he knew it was special. And it was, I will never forget that. I think my joy returned. I want to say that, because in that mass, like, I just started noticing the people around me and like my care for them and like my interest in their lives again. And it was just like, I think that's when that happened. That had to have been. And it was probably around July, August. So yeah. And it's just, but everything happens at a pace. And I think everybody expects things to immediately. And even I did, you know, then it's like, okay, I did this consecration to St. Joseph. Like, all right, God, where's my husband? That's what I was asking for. You know, it was like, didn't happen, you know, and I think we get discouraged because it's not on our timeline. But looking back, I mean, I had to get over that first, you know, and I have to get over probably some other things, especially, just, I think I'm still finding joy and I'm still coming back to my senses of childlike wonder and awe. And I pray for that, you know, I pray that those things come back, because it can be so easy to get lost in, I don't know, like the scruples of things, like getting lost in, I need to do this right. And where it gets you to a point where you can't enjoy life anymore. And I hope nobody's in that right now. And if you are, know my prayers for you, because that's a tough place to be in. It's, I don't wish that on anybody. Honestly, I don't. I was having a conversation about this to a friend this past week, and she's going through some hard times with her, I think, just trust in the church. And I think she's going through the same thing I was. And I said, Kelly, do you remember when I was going through that this past summer? And she said, yeah. And I said, do you feel like that's what this is? And she said, I think so, from what you've described. She said, I just can't find any peace with this. And she's like, but I know it'll come. And I pray for her, and I pray for anybody that struggles with scrupulosity, because it's just not a fun place to be in. It'll just rob you of every ounce of peace and joy that you have. But it makes you lean on God. It makes you call out to him and do every consecration that you can, you know, and ask for all the help, you know, that you can get.
When I worked at EWTN, I had to work the mass where they did that for St. Joseph on his Saint feast day. That was the longest line I've ever seen. for communion. It went out the church into the parking lot, down the all the way down the parking lot. So
wow.
And my wife Connie, she's in there watching Real Housewives right now. I'm just kidding, but maybe she is. But that was that she really liked Saint Joseph.
Yeah,
she likes him a lot. So there's going to be people watch this. They're not really sure what you're talking about. Talking to a saint, could you know, like you're saying that Saint Joseph, the like foster dad, Jesus's earthly foster, not stepdad, but Mary's, was it chaste, what's it called? The chaste spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're saying that you can have a relationship with the saint.
Yeah.
And that saint can look out for you and help you out in certain areas.
For sure. I think all areas that you're struggling with, that you're pouring, I mean, you know, that you're reaching out to them in regards to, I think things that you don't even realize. Mary is very powerful. And she is one, you know, she's one that to me is everybody kind of knows, you know, like everybody knows Mary. Everybody knows what she's capable of. But Joseph, to me, that I'm telling you, that's where I got really surprised. With him. And even my consecration mass after I consecrated myself to Mary was not, to me, was not as mystically powerful. And I say that just because that there's no way else to explain that. The way that I felt during that mass. But he's just like that quiet, just powerful saint. I mean, just you don't expect it, I guess that's why, you know?
Is he the one they call the terror of demons, or is that someone else?
Yes. I think so.
I'm the dumbest Catholic on earth.
Well, you have an excuse. You haven't been in as long as I have.
There's some things that I want to study and explore and do, but I put it off because I don't want to bottom out. You know what I mean?
What does that mean?
He has terror of demons. One thing I hated about working EW10 was having to work the mass every day, to work it, not to sit there or stand there and kneel there and enjoy mass, but I had to work it. You know, it was my job to be there behind the cameras.
Were you Catholic then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was one of the few Catholics that work at EWTN, I think. But, you know, I was at Mass every day. I worked at 6 o'clock live Mass. You know, 11 million people a day watch that live Mass. And I worked it on the weekends. I worked it all the time for years. And I was like, it was starting to be work and not worse. It was so special to me. And it was starting to become work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're having to work in there, and that's the only mass I'm getting because it coincides with Sunday. You know, I'm
right
like the priest is. And not working there anymore was a blessing to get to go to a mass and just participate instead of working it. Because, see, I was security.
And
I had to judge people. Everybody walked in that mass, I'm judging them. What the hell are you doing here dressed like? You know, you look like somebody just stepped off, you know, United.
Well, that's part of your job, right? I mean, that's going to keep you, it's going to keep everybody safe. You got to.
They had a girl show up in a bikini once. I went there, I was off, but they have crazy people show up and people try to attack the priest during the mass. They have all kinds of weirdos and stalking women and stuff through the years. Weird. And so you see, when you work the mass, you know everyone that's a regular. You just look in there and everybody's silhouette from behind. You know how they sit, you know them all.
Mm-hmm.
poop when there's visitors there, you in particular know if they look kooky. You know, so I just, you know, you just have to work it, because the minute you start not working it, when the minute you let your guard down, when something happens,
right,
and stuff does happen that people don't see. And
do you miss it?
I miss those fryers that work there. But what's really neat is one of the people that's very popular at EWTN lives about 20 feet from me in that direction,
mm-hmm.
across the street. And one of the vice president lives two doors down. And then one of the top three lives back behind me. So when they had big parties and stuff, like Christmas, man, I came home someplace Christmas Eve and it was rocking. And they had the garage door open and it was party. It was EWTN, folks. You know, there's big name people over there. And I won't mention the name, but Mother Angelica's very first employee.
Wow.
Igwig there. He saw me get out of the car, come to the house. He comes beating on my door. I open the door. He's about three sheets in the wind. Come on, Robert. Come on. I said, man, I'm beat. I got blah, 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 blah. Because I was, you know, I was just wore out. But, you know, I see these people. Sometimes they come over, you know, like Father Leonard to come over and, you know, different people I knew. I missed him. I missed Father Mitch. I don't know if you know him, Father Mitch. Mm-hmm.
Oh, like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I miss talking to him like I'm talking to you. I ask him, I just ask him all kinds of questions. Like I'm doing, I pick his brain and all. But, you know, I don't miss working 12 on 12 off at all.
Yeah.
Plus, there's more money in real estate. And I like working with kids. You know, I do substitute teaching. And there's nothing in the world like working with those little guys. I love that. But I'm going to help me think of a title for this, Mississippi Queen, because this has gone in a direction I did not anticipate about confession.
And, okay. Yeah, me neither.
It's really helping me a lot. And we got like 2 minutes left. So, hey, all of you, Jesus' birthday is so awesome. Praise him, amen. Teresa said shalom while ago. I got three Teresas, and all three of those Teresas have the same last name. And they're all in my phone.
Wow.
Because they've been, one of them's been a guest, one of them is scared to come on, another one I know from real estate. So they're all in my phone. I don't know who I'm talking to. You know, but I don't know which Teresa that is.
See, you seem to have that problem.
I get people mixed up. You know how many Lisas I know? And when you become Catholic, you know, like 31 Marias.
Yeah.
You know, and working in Instagram and YouTube and all that, and all these people corresponding and working on different projects together, they're all the same names. You know, yours is easy. You sound like a DJ. This is Casey Stevens, you know, like a DJ or a bartender or something. Easy name to remember. So we got like a minute left. Can you?
Do you know this? Chris Lopez asked if I was a convert. No, I'm not a convert.
Chris, oh, Lopez.
Do you know him?
You know why he's asking you that?
Why?
I guarantee you, because you're excited.
Oh.
And most regular old Catholics a lot of them are not excited. And you sound very excited about your faith.
Well. I think, like, what is it? I think it was G.K. Chesterton that said, what is it? Something about, you got to find the truth about religion, and once you do, you got to sink your teeth into it. And I think that's what everybody needs to do. I think whatever religion, I'm saying this is like, whether you're Muslim or whether you're, I mean, if you can't put your life on it, then what is the point? You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't understand these people that just treat their religion like it's just something that can go with the wind. You know? Well, I go to church, but it's like, but I wouldn't die for my faith. And it's like, then what are you doing? Like, that's what true conversion is. You know, that's to me what the Catholic Church requires. It's like, you've got to want that. You've got to try and get there. You know, I mean, maybe we're not all there yet, but that's where we're trying to be. We're trying all to be saints. And,
you're right.
And not necessarily martyrs, but if God called for that, that's what we're being called to do.
I mean, we're supposed to be trying to get to heaven. So it's right. A little serious.
Right.
I mean, for Catholics, we got three destinations possible. Straight to hell, straight to heaven, or purgatory. Or if you're Baptist, I guess they believe they said a prayer when they were 4 years old, and they're good, even though they've been, you know, at the cat house 1,000 times since then without, you know what I mean? So you're right. You're right. That actor, Peter Sarsgaard, do you know who
yeah.
he is?
Yeah.
I kind of like him and all. He said he became Catholic because it was a death cult. He said you either have to go all the way in it or you're really not in it. And that seems to be what has happened to you since college.
Oh, yeah. All in.
Those are good.
I mean, even the trials that I mean, life has tried to break me. I mean, I didn't get into a lot today. I kind of just skimmed on the edge of everything, but it's just made my faith stronger, you know? And I mean, I think a lot of the problem with people nowadays is they don't really believe that the devil exists. I think they just think he's an idea or like this character in opposition to good, you know, and he's not really real. And it's like, oh, that's what he wants, you know? Yeah. I think if people really understood how the devil works and what we're up against, it will scare you and it will make you run to your father, you know? Evil is all around us, you know, and once you've got some wisdom about you and God's granted you that, you can't unsee it. And once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. And even in the darkest times that I've had, especially with this past year, I still knew whose child I was and that this was for a reason. And it had to be for my salvation. And that's anybody that's suffering. I mean, it's for your salvation.
Well, Casey, I'd love to have you on.
Me too.
You know I love you. I'm going to send you a text later. And I do appreciate you coming on. I do. It's been real good to hear you tonight. It's been good.
Sorry I didn't get you to 11 million viewers like you did at EWTN.
That's okay. Me and Connie will be down there probably this summer sometime. We'll let you show us around that. I'm going to go to Natchez.
Please do. I've got family there. I can definitely give you the tours.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll see you soon. All right.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.